We're talking about the latest in national politics, from relationships with other countries on full display at the G7 earlier this week, to domestic policy and the shaping of the 2020 campaign. We just have no shortage of topics for conversation. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. What questions do you have about the latest immigration moves by the Trump administration? What's your opinion on moving funds away from disaster relief to support enforcement at the U.S. border? 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. Tim Hagel is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. He's also a faculty advisor to the College Republicans there. Tim, welcome back to The Morning Show.
Morning.
Good morning, and thank you for being with us. We know that the Washington Post is reporting that President Trump wants to complete his border wall before the 2020 election takes place, and we understand that there are some moves to try to fast-track construction using eminent domain or trying to avoid environmental regulations. Tim, how critical is this for President Trump in an election season?
Well, probably fairly critical. I wouldn't say it's a do or die kind of thing for him in terms of satisfying one of his major promises that he made as a candidate, but it's certainly something that he needs to show that he's doing something in terms of making progress, just to be at least be able to say, look, you know, we're working on it. It may not be completed yet, but we're getting there kind of a thing. Of course, as we've also seen, that he'll blame Democrats for obstructing it, which he's done and will continue to do, but certainly he needs to make some progress. And aside from even Democrats maybe wanting, not maybe, but wanting to obstruct progress on the wall, that's one of their big issues too, is that you do have things like you mentioned, eminent domain. So, of course, people that own the land along the where the wall is intended to be built, they need to be paid. You can't just take their land, and so they may be resisting too. And so that's kind of a bureaucratic thing that's just business as usual, and so you have to find ways around that as well.
You know, some argue that the president was joking. We have reports, though, that he told aides that he'll pardon people if they break the law when they are trying to make this happen. How should we interpret that statement from the leader of the country?
Well, it sounds like it's another one of these things where Trump kind of comes up with these phrases and sort of saying, throwing things out there that maybe he's not particularly serious about or hasn't really thought through in ways that were used to presidents and other government leaders saying, okay, let's think this through before we make a statement, because they often know that if they make statements that seem, you know, really over the top or ridiculous or whatever, that they'll get a lot of blowback on it. Well, Trump doesn't care about that, that he'll kind of throw out these things, get people excited, and that's sort of part of his method of operation, that he basically gets people excited, gets people worked up talking about it, and he says, oh, you know, that's not really going to do that, or we're going to do something a little bit different, or, you know, why are you complaining about this? You should have been complaining about it. So it just kind of generates conversation, to put it politely.
U.S. Representative David Cicilline is a Democratic leader, and he suggested that if this is going on, this might be warranting an investigation by the House Judiciary Committee. So, I mean, is the president playing with fire and creating a real political issue, you know, especially as Democrats have the House?
Well, to a certain extent, if the president took any steps along something that might be considered inappropriate, if not illegal, then certainly people would want to be concerned. But again, you have to be careful about the president just throwing out some of these things like he ordinarily does. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is, again, we're not used to the president's doing that kind of a thing. And so it can rub people the wrong way, again, to kind of minimize that. And if the House wants to, because it's in the hands of the Democrats to investigate, they're going to investigate. The problem for them is that they're investigating so many things at this point that it's taking up a lot of their time, and it can potentially hurt them a year from now when we're in election season for 2020 if they don't have or haven't shown any progress in terms of passing bills or getting things through. And certainly for the Democrats, they say, well, look, all we can do is pass at the House. It's going to stall in the Senate. Well, okay, then, you know, you need to work with the Senate and find something that you can work on a bipartisan basis to get certain things done. It can't all be obstruction, 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 even if you don't like President Trump. And so, and that works both ways, that both parties sort of have that problem where they need to show that they're at least trying in one way or another.
Tim Hagel is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. I'm Keely Boltina. In a few moments, we'll talk about the trade war with China. We're wondering how tariffs are affecting your business. Are you out of work or making less money because of the trade war? What do you think the right strategy is for the U.S.? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 to talk about that and other issues of national politics. Tim, I want to stick with the border wall. We know that the Trump administration is using hundreds of millions of dollars set aside for disaster relief for border enforcement. And, you know, that's right as Tropical Storm Dorian might be turning into a hurricane in the southeastern United States. So is this the right move at the right time?
Well, in terms of whether it's the right move, I kind of split that question up. It's something that I saw pointed out where the Obama administration did something basically the same, that something along the lines of $400 million was reprogrammed. And it's a matter of what you're using that money for. And again, administrations do this all the time, that they are, of course, bound by whatever amount, whatever money that they're allowed to spend based on congressional authorizations, but they can sometimes, as the phrase is, reprogram it, saying, well, it's going to go for this, but now we're going to use it for this other kind of thing. And they've got it from the administration's point of view, and other people recognize this too, there's a crisis on the border, and if they're going to use that money, if not for disaster relief, then to deal with this other crisis situation, then that seems understandable, aside from, you know, being opposed to whatever it is that the Trump administration is doing. On the other hand, and then we get to the second part of that question, which is the timing of it does look kind of bad when you have a storm out there that's becoming a hurricane. Maybe Puerto Rico seems to have been spared primarily, but it's now heading towards Florida. We don't know quite where the models are going to show that it's going to go. But there's a great potential that, you know, you could have a very disastrous situation in Florida, and now all of a sudden some of this money has been used elsewhere. On the other hand, if you do have a situation where there's a terrible disaster and a lot of money is needed in the Federal Disaster Relief Fund, I'm sure Congress would be willing to appropriate more money for that purpose. But it does look bad, and it gives, again, the Democrats an opportunity to criticize not just the move, but, as you indicate, the timing of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Congress, and one of the reasons Immigration and Customs Enforcement said it needed to transfer the funds is that Congress didn't appropriate enough money for detention beds and other operations at the border. So if we move the money now and then Congress passes federal disaster relief, it's hard to figure out whose responsibility this is.
Right.
It's not just me, Tim.
That's part of the problem, and to some extent, it's even part of the game, so to speak, that people are playing, is that you want to, that certainly Democrats don't want to give Trump a win, and they, you know, want to make, to a certain extent, maybe want to find ways to criticize him. If all of a sudden they put a lot of money into solving the housing and separation issues and all these other things at the border, then that makes that situation less dire, and so then they have something less to complain about. Now, that's a pretty cynical way of looking at it, but it does seem that that's what's happening when you see Congress, particularly the Democrats in the House, don't seem willing to then appropriate enough money to solve this particular crisis. But on the other hand, they're going to say, oh, but this was caused by Trump's policies, doing these sorts of things, and he caused this, and it's not our fault. And so everybody's pointing the finger someplace else. And I think the general public at some point just gets fed up with the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's why you see a lot of people getting turned off by politics.
That makes sense. Political scientist Tim Hagel stays with us. Next up, we're talking about the Chinese tariffs, the United States senator saying Russia is denying their visas. What's your take on these situations? 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina, and it's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Two months from now, children born overseas to some American military members or federal workers may not have automatic U.S. citizenship. We learned yesterday that parents will have to apply for citizenship for kids before they turn 18. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about developments in politics this week, and we're taking your calls. Were you born while your parents served in another country? What do you think of this new policy? 800-642-1234. We're also wondering how you think the U.S. should position itself with Russia. Do you see tensions ratcheting up, or is this business as usual? Email us at ideas@wpr.org. The University of Iowa's Tim Hagel is offering information and analysis. He's Associate Professor of Political Science. Tim, that new federal policy issued Wednesday says some children born to parents in the military overseas can't claim automatic citizenship. What's going on with this policy? Who does it apply to?
You know, that's a good question. When I saw that, I went ahead and took a look at the policy advice that was issued by the relevant government agency. I forget the acronym for it. But it and then looked at the statute. I looked that up, too, and trying to sort this out, saying, well, how does this actually apply? And, of course, you saw some people come out immediately and say, oh, this is terrible. It does all those things, especially in terms of, you know, people that are in the armed services and that are stationed overseas and have children. And then somebody else came back and said, well, no, wait a minute. Only it applies if you adopt a child while you're stationed overseas, either as armed forces or as, you know, part of a diplomatic mission or something like that. And so, and that's a big difference in terms of what's going on that in terms of how that law applies. And so I'm not really an expert in immigration law. So I think that we need to maybe wait and see how much it actually applies and who it applies to. In part, the rationale, according to the document, the policy advice was that it was to try to make things more consistent, that apparently part of the problem was that, you know, depending on which government form you used, you had to do this thing. If you used a different form, you had to do it a little bit differently in order to make sure to verify the citizenship, that in some sense it was still automatic, but you had to verify it given that the child was born outside the United States. So it may be more of just a bureaucratic thing that just kind of sounds bad but really isn't. We'll kind of have to wait and see.
And it also seems to apply to parents living in the U.S. for fewer than 5 years before they're overseas. This has been kind of piecemealed out. I feel like we don't have a full grasp of what's going on with a policy that apparently takes effect at the end of October. What should we watch for when we're trying to figure out what the details really are?
Right. And you mentioned the residency thing. That's part of it, that you need to have resided in the United States for 5 years. And then there are some different things because you can kind of leave and come back and that sort of thing to establish your citizenship. So you can be a citizen of the United States and never actually having lived here. But then the idea is that to pass that citizenship on down to your kids, that's where you need to have established that residency, either on your part or the part of that child. Again, this takes place sometime in October, at the end of October. And so I don't expect that we'll see huge changes. It's more this kind of thing where you say, oh my goodness, you know, the children of people that are stationed overseas, armed forces in particular, how could we do this to kind of thing? So it's that kind of a thing where you can take a policy that's maybe pretty vague, not really sure how it applies, and it sounds really bad. So it's another way to attack the administration. Whereas if you look at it and say, well, wait a minute, how many people does this actually apply to? What's the purpose of it? Is it really just to try to untangle some of the red tape and make it clear as far as what's going on? Does it really make any significant change? It didn't seem to, but again, to a certain extent, we just kind of have to wait and see. If all of a sudden it's applying to a huge number of people and it's a big hassle to do so, okay, now maybe Congress needs to get involved again and clarify the statute. And if it's just, again, sort of a thing, sorting things out, one less form, hopefully fairly simple, then it's not going to be a big deal.
Tim Hagel is an associate professor of political science. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking about the latest in national politics. That includes the 2020 race for president. When do you want to see Democratic hopefuls get out of the race? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. First, let's talk China. Troy in Muskego has something to say this morning. Troy, welcome to the morning show.
Yes, I just want to say that this whole tariff thing is a complete scam. I grew up, anybody grew up in the 80s knows that It was just a way for Donald Trump to get a lot of votes from blue-collar workers. Everybody knows in the 80s that NAFTA was, one of the reasons that it was blamed for a lot of people losing their jobs. And what ended up happening was there was this big talk about, oh, it's because of tariffs. And here's the irony of it. Most of those people are retired. that worked blue-collar jobs in the 80s, and it was a way of getting their votes. And I do want to say that I think what's going to come out of the tariffs is absolutely nothing for workers. What's going to end up, we got a tax rate. We haven't seen wages have not going up anywhere near where they need to be. And those jobs ain't coming back. So that's all I want to say.
Troy, thanks for the call. Tim, he's got this take on this kind of ratcheting up of these, you know, trade considerations between the U.S. and China right now. What's going on with the back and forth?
Well, to a certain extent, it has to do with, as the caller indicated, that it has to do with the job situation. He was talking more about NAFTA and, you know, where Trump is, of course, trying to negotiate a new deal with Canada and Mexico over that, and that's something that's sort of waiting to have some action taken in Congress. But as far as the China trade situation, it's a matter of not just the jobs situation, but also in terms of things like stealing our intellectual property and other sorts of things. And that's part of what Trump's trying to deal with. And, you know, to a certain extent, people understand that, but it does cause a certain pain. And that's one of the things and phrases that you hear often a lot is short-term pain for long-term gain. And so people are often willing to deal with a certain amount of problems, whether it's slightly increased prices for some goods that maybe we could get cheaper from China and so forth over the short term, in terms of long term getting a better deal with China in terms of them behaving, so to speak, in terms of not stealing our intellectual property and not dumping products and what have you.
You know,
we'll have to, again, wait and see if that's going to be successful. But at a certain point, when that short-term pain becomes a little bit more long-term, that's when people start to get a little more antsy about it and are not happy if their products are not being sold, something, of course, that a lot of Midwestern agricultural states are very concerned about.
Yeah. With that rationale and the economics of it, what's your take on the strategy? We have conflicting reports about whether the president regrets ratcheting up the trade war or actually wishes he would have, you know, increased tariffs more. The strategy is kind of it seems to be full of conflict.
Well, that's just so unusual for this administration, right?
Fair point.
You know, as Trump has indicated, this is how he negotiates. That, you know, when you look at how he does things, people often say, well, how could he do this? You know, Chinese President Xi, he's an enemy, he's a friend, he's an enemy, he's a friend. And, you know, people were suggesting that Trump is inconsistent in this. Well, that's, and Trump even said this is how I negotiate. He kind of keeps people off kilter to a certain extent, gets them out of their comfort zone. And that gives him, from his perspective, an advantage in terms of negotiating. Plus, and we don't often see it this way, but there are problems in China as well. Its economy is having troubles as well. So they're not just sort of weathering the storm that easily in terms of dealing with the tariff situation. They've got problems of one sort or another, not even to mention what's going on in Hong Kong at the time right now. And so it's a matter of being able to sort of stay on track from Trump's perspective, even though in terms of the things that he says, it kind of seems like it's one way one day, one another way another day. And as I said, people just aren't used to that type of negotiating, even though as I was thinking about this morning, we're, you know, almost 3 years into Trump's presidency and people still seem to be unnerved by this.
Tim, Republican Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, and his fellow U.S. Senator Democrat Chris Murphy say their visas were denied when they were going to go as part of a congressional delegation to Russia. What's your take on that situation?
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting that it's a bipartisan kind of situation, but both of those senators were fairly critical of the Kremlin. And as we saw recently with Israel not wanting a couple of representatives to come over, that countries have that ability, and we may not like it. We may think that it's appropriate. And I know some of the pushback with regard to Senator Johnson and Senator Johnson Murphy was that, well, hey, these are people that are, you know, government's representatives, and they have the ability to discuss problems that are in Russia. Well, from Russia's perspective, they say, well, look, this is not our problem. And, you know, if you're critical of our government, we don't want you here. Well, okay, we may not like what Russia's doing, but that's their prerogative. But it's also not entirely unusual that the United States and Russia often say that certain people are persona non grata and won't let them come into the country. Maybe it's not always high government officials like U.S. senators, but certainly there are a number of people that either we or they don't want in their in our countries.
And we just have a moment left, but is it different based on the person versus how, you know, the U.S. overall is dealing with Russia? Is Senator Johnson out of step?
No, I don't think so. He may be a little bit more forceful in terms of his condemnations of what Russia is doing, but it's certainly something that we've seen many other members of Congress do, too. Why they pick on him particularly, it's not entirely clear, but it's certainly gotten attention that if you're going to say, okay, we're not going to allow this person in, well, if it's a low-level diplomat, that's not going to get as much attention to what Russia is trying to do as if it's a United States senator
right.
or a couple of them.
Thank you. Tim, thanks so much for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Tim Hagel is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. He's also a faculty advisor to the college Republicans there. Coming up, Wisconsin lawmakers approved sweeping changes to landlord and tenant protection since 2011, often tipping the scale in favor of property owners. What questions do you have about the rules for renters and property owners in our state? 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Boltina, and it's The Morning Show.